listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are engaged in a very special deep dive on Islam and the tenets of the faith, the practices that flow from them, the things that are permissible and impermissible, and who embraces these teachings in the manner in which they are considered authoritatively to be given by God and by the example of Muhammad. Our guide for this very important trip is Dr. Bill Warner, the founder and director of the Center for the Study of Political Islam. He is the author of 12 books on the subject. You can check them all out from the simple Quran, an abridged Quran, through Muhammad and the unbelievers, the political traditions of Islam, through self-study courses, and so much more at politicalislam.com. Bill, we were talking before the break about the fact that there are Muslims who clearly embrace the teachings of Sharia with all of their repressive aspects, their anti-constitutional features, their hate for women, and so on. And there are Muslims in the United States and elsewhere who do not. We think, we non-Muslims, think of the latter as generally peaceable and tolerant and good Muslims. That wouldn't be the definition for the authorities of the faith, though, would it?
No. What you're describing is what I call a nice Muslim. And it's a nice Muslim is typically the professional engineer at work who seems to be a nice guy, and you know he even occasionally has a beer. That's a nice Muslim. He, however, is not a good Muslim. A good Muslim is someone like Osama bin Laden. Well, he's dead. Let's not use him. An Islamic State jihadi would be a good Muslim. Because if we're going to talk about a Muslim being good, bad, or indifferent, what is our scale of measurement? Our scale of measurement is the doctrine of Islam. So when I was in Kosovo, I met many Muslims who had never been to a mosque, never fasted, did not pay the zakat, and they called themselves Muslims, but what they meant was is they had a grandparent who was a Muslim. They themselves, although they call themselves a Muslim, practice absolutely nothing about the doctrine of Islam.
The faith tradition more than the practice of it. Bill Warner is our guest, and we're discussing this phenomenon, true in Kosovo and elsewhere, where people have hailed from Muslim countries or have a sort of cultural attachment to Islam but do not practice in accordance with the dictates of Sharia, to the extent that they are not only not good Muslims as far as the Islamic State characters are concerned, for example, or for that matter, the scholars and leaders of Al-Azhar University in Egypt, they are actually considered to be apostates, are they not, Bill? And what is the consequence of apostasy under Sharia?
Well, this is one of the reasons that I spend my life doing what I do. I think that a person's religion is their business. But in Islam, a person's religion is the Muslim's business. There's a distinction between Islam and other codes of life. Jews have a code called halakha, which is Jewish law. Jewish law says that Jews don't eat bacon. Sharia law says nobody gets to eat bacon. That is, Sharia law includes not only the Muslim, but the non-Muslim. And so what the Muslim is not allowed to do is to become a non-Muslim. That's apostasy. Well, this is grievous.
This is really central to the sort of Islamic supremacist character. It's imposing its will on everyone, not simply on the faithful.
So the apostasy laws remind me of the old line from Hotel California: "You can check out any time you want, but you can never leave." Well, this is painful. Now, we have a new president, and one of the things I would like for him to do is to declare that apostates all around the world can come to America, because I think we should stand for apostasy or not apostasy, whatever. I think that we should bring all people who come to this country under our protective ethics. That is, wife beating is legal under the Sharia. I don't care. In America, you can't beat your wife. We need to insist on the supremacy of our moral code over their moral code.
This is such an important topic. We're going to come back in a bit to what Donald Trump should do. But just staying for the moment, Bill, with the sort of anti-constitutional character of Sharia, we are told that the Constitution protects all religions, and therefore that this practice, however barbaric, however misogynistic, however subversive it may be, particularly in the hands of the Muslim Brotherhood, as we'll talk about in a moment, it has to be protected by the Constitution of the United States. How do you respond to that?
I could care less about a Muslim's religion. His religion deals with avoiding hell and going to heaven. I wish him the best on that. The part of Islam that I object to has nothing to do with the religion of Islam. Salvation is not a question I deal with. What I want is the ability in my civilization to practice my civilization unhindered. But what Islam says is no. You may not have previously ever allowed your Christians to stop and take a prayer break, but we're here now and you will let us pray. To school systems, they say you will start serving halal food. That is, what they say is a political... When Muslims say you can't bring any pork to the menu of the school, that makes demands on me. What I object to is the part of Islam, the political part, that says to me how me and my society should live. I reject that. We don't need the Sharia to tell us how to live. We have a better system of government already.
I would go a little further, Bill Warner, because it strikes me that what you're really describing is a program that is, inconsistent, incompatible with our Constitution.
Absolutely.
Maybe the patina of religiosity to it, but the underlying political, military, and legal doctrine of Sharia, and to the extent that it is seditious, that it actually requires
Absolutely.
The replacement of our Constitution, it is, it's something we are protected by laws against. It's not something we have to protect in its practice in our country. And that's something it seems to me we've had successive American administrations miss and put us at greater risk as a result of having missed it. What are your thoughts?
Well, let's be clear here. Islam restricts our rights and freedoms. The Muslim Brotherhood wants to implement that in spite of the Constitution saying that we have certain rights. But we discover that, now Obama gets a lot of blame for what he's done in terms of putting the Muslim Brotherhood and putting the elements of Sharia into place. But we must understand that the first implementation of Sharia that I heard of was under George Bush, in which he said he allowed a man to be fired from the Pentagon, Steve Coughlin, and the complaint against Steve Coughlin was that he was a hater. And what did Steve Coughlin say? He taught the Pentagon what was in the Sharia. So what I believe in is that we should have free and open discussion of all ideas, including the Sharia. But we've seen presidents, both Democrat and Republican, say, no, we don't need to be talking about that. That is offensive to Islam.
And that's really kind of the rub. Steve Coughlin, of course, is a friend and colleague of many years for those of us here at the Center for Security Policy, and we appreciate
a great
his
man.
Service, as well as have learned much from him about this threat. And suppression of freedom of speech is very much part of this doctrine's agenda, and it is being promoted and pursued by the Muslim Brotherhood and the Organization of Islamic Cooperation. We'll talk about both of those groups and what they're doing, not just elsewhere around the world, but here in the United States as well, with Dr. Bill Warner of the Center for the Study of Political Islam, right after this.